How are you going to choose between them?
It's a very good question. Their side effect profile is a little bit different, and the way that you take the drugs is a little bit different. So if I have a patient who is really good at following directions and can do the 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and know that she can't start the palbociclib again until we have demonstrated her neutrophil count is over 1,000, I would probably go with palbociclib. If we're looking at a patient who has a little more difficulty with compliance and following directions, the abemaciclib benefit is that it's continuous dosing, so they never have to remember when to stop or start their drug, but there's more GI toxicity.
What do we know, we're comparing the different CDK inhibitors, about CNS penetration amongst the three, and does it change your choice if you know they have brain mets?
So it's a good question. Abemaciclib has shown clinical activity in CNS metastases, but we're talking about very small numbers of patients.
Objective responses?
Yes. Sarah Tolaney actually did a very elegant study, I think, where she gave patients abemaciclib in the days prior to a CNS resection of a metastasis. And at the time of the resection, measured the abemaciclib levels in the plasma, CSF, and in the tumor, and found that the levels were pretty equivalent, plasma, CNS, and CSF. So she has clinical demonstration that abemaciclib is getting into the CNS, as well as a handful of objective responses. Now we're talking about very small numbers, single-digit numbers of patients, so we need more data, but this is clinical proof it's getting in. Preclinically, ribociclib has data that it penetrates the CNS in mouse models, but we don't yet have clinical activity. And I don't know about palbociclib. Maybe you do.
Actually, I've been told it doesn't.
Okay.
I want to actually give the three of you again a chance. We're going to move on now in a second, and we're going to talk about BRCA testing and PARP inhibitors in breast cancer. But I want to give the three of you a chance to maybe throw out a couple questions to the faculty about ER-positive metastatic disease. Andy, any questions you want to throw out there?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's just so much going on trying to differentiate treating premenopausal and postmenopausal women.
Is there much of an issue about chemo versus endocrine therapy and ER-positive metastatic disease? We haven't talked about that lately. I'm not exactly sure what goes on in practice. In the past, a lot of people had the thought about with visceral disease, maybe I need to use chemo. Any issues about chemo versus endocrine therapy and metastatic disease that come up with you, or pretty much everybody's getting hormone therapy?
Well, it's really changed a lot, you know, whereas I would always differentiate bone-only disease and visceral disease, and so my visceral disease patients got chemo. Now I'm in a situation, again, that's really dictated to by insurance. Since I'm West Coast and we don't use much anthracyclines, I get my hands tied on the agents that I can use in metastatic disease. So now I find that I'm starting to use some of the CDKs up front more with hormonal disease.
So I was going to ask you, we were talking before about the issue of do things translate from metastatic disease to the adjuvant setting. George, there are trials, and to me, I think it'd be awesome to get a patient in a trial on an adjuvant CDK inhibitor. Mm-hmm. What are some of the trials that are going on, and any speculations about whether this is going to play out in the adjuvant setting?
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, there's ongoing trials. These trials, by the way, frequently have very lovely names. Penelope, Palace.
Early.
You know, early. All of the CDK4/6 inhibitors are being looked at or will be looked at in the adjuvant setting.